The numbers of new cases and hospitalizations continue to decline from their Delta surge peak, but as you just heard and knew already, vaccines and variants remain issues. Once a week, we check in with Dr. Jim Shames, Medical Director at Jackson County Health and Human Services, to ask questions about the trends in the pandemic and the responses to the pandemic. Dr. Shames, welcome back.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
Thanks. Let's talk about, numbers again. We start there. The cases are dropping. For the week of September 26th, the cases for the entire week were finally under 500 again for the first time in months. But we've also got kids back in school, cold weather arriving. It seems like there's always some complicating factors.
Oh, yes. That's very dynamic, and it interfaces with, you know, what we do as a society and other diseases, of course. You know, the Delta surge seems to definitely be dropping. We're now at the level of infection that we were last winter, which was high, but certainly probably a quarter of what we were experiencing a couple of months ago.
All right, so we're essentially back to the post-Thanksgiving and through the Christmas season surge that we had? Okay, back to that point, but that's obviously still above the baselines where you'd like to be.
Yeah, the problem is not going away by any means. Mm-hmm. But the number of people who are, have already antibodies either due to disease or having been immunized is much higher now. So there's fewer people to pass the virus around.
All right, that brings in an email that Michelle in Brookings sent in, asking for just sort of a double check after reading some stuff that one of the local representatives put in. I just wanted to run past you some accuracy and information so that the basic questions come down to whether there's much difference in the vaccinated immune response versus the naturally developed immune response. Is there much research that you've looked at on that?
Well, you know, you have to remember that we've been living with this for a year and a half or so, but that's only a year and a half's worth of data. And something like how much protection do you get after a vaccine versus how much protection you get after the natural disease is something that's going to be answerable, you know, quite a bit into the future. It looks like that there's waning protection for both groups, and that by combining them, you know, if someone had natural disease, getting the vaccine definitely boosts their protection, but how much of each I think is still unsettled.
All right, and then the other question, the other basic question that Michelle and Brookings had was about the virus loads in the noses of people who have received vaccinations, what you might know about that.
Yeah, so when we say viral load and we talk about PCR tests, mm-hmm. we're really talking about fragments of RNA. We have no idea whether we're talking about live virus or not. Mm-hmm. So it could be that people who've been vaccinated who have large, you know, high amounts of material may not still be as infectious as those without, because they've done battle in their nose due to their antibodies, killing the virus present, but it may not be as infectious. What we do know is that people who are vaccinated, even with high amounts of RNA material in their noses, don't seem to shed the virus for as long a period of time as those who've been unvaccinated, and there is evidence that they aren't as infectious as you might expect from some of the data. So we need to be careful how we think about this. There are some implications that may not prove to be true when you do further studies.
All right. I'm glad we're in this zone now, because it does seem like this is a major point of contention for people who don't want to get vaccinated, as they're afraid that people who do get vaccinated can shed the virus greatly. And I think what you're saying is there is a presence there, but it's not necessarily a presence of a virus that's capable of doing anything.
Yeah, we just don't know for sure. We do know that vaccinated people can get sick, they can be hospitalized, they can die, and that they can pass the virus to others. In all of those categories, the numbers are significantly less than for those that are unvaccinated. It's an imperfect world. This is an imperfect vaccine. This is a virus that is very clever and keeps changing and finding ways to infect us. But our science is doing us well. And, we may need booster shots. We may need an alteration in the vaccine. in the future to stay as safe as possible.
Oh, yeah. We do tend to personify the vaccine, don't we? It's clever. It's vicious.
All yes, right. Things.
Yeah. Yeah, Dr. Jim Shames, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, as we talk about COVID-19 in our weekly Q&A session. You can join in at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Thanks again to Michelle and Brookings for that email over the last couple of days. A new one here from Janet, no town given. She says, I work with the migrant community from the fires, and they want to know how much does it cost to get the monoclonal antibody treatment for COVID-19, and where is the best place to go?
I think it costs the federal government somewhere around $7,000, and I think it costs the consumer nothing. These treatments are free, and anyone that's being charged for them really needs to squawk about it, because the monoclonal antibody is available to anyone. In terms of where to get it, Asante has a drive-through monoclonal antibody program at Black Oak at their facility there. Providence, I believe, is offering it now, and La Clinic is offering it, and others maybe as well. The thing to know is it now can be given subcutaneously, so it is an outpatient procedure. You need a healthcare provider, a licensed healthcare provider, to authorize it. We're hoping it'll be streamlined and easy, and it's a pretty effective treatment.
Subcutaneous, so is it a shot?
Four shots, in fact.
Four shots, okay.
As opposed to getting an IV started and sitting in an infusion room for hours in a hospital-like setting. So it's cumbersome, but much less cumbersome than it had been.
Okay, so the four shots, and they're all done in quick succession, and then you're out of there?
Well, you have to be observed for a while because you just got an injection.
You just got four shots.
Then you're out of there, right?
Okay. All right. Thanks for that question to Janet. Phone call here from Derek and Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Jim Shames.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Stop me if you can't hear me. I've just got a couple questions that I'm curious about. And I could be wrong, but I think, Dr. Shames, I think I heard you pre-pandemic at a town hall, and correct me if I'm wrong, say that you didn't think vaccine mandates would work very well for schools, and I just wonder if you have any personal take on mandates. I'm someone who is vaccinated, and I have to say some of the information coming from physicians, and particularly I think of Dr. Robert Malone, who is an mRNA pioneer, some of their concerns about the vaccine, I don't have an argument against. So if you have any information, I would be curious about it. For instance, asserting that booster shots of the Alpha variant aren't really going to help you with Delta. We can't vaccinate our way out of this problem with 43 million Americans having had COVID at this point. We can essentially create a resistance in the way that we do with antibiotics, overuse of antibiotics on farm animals, et cetera. Some of these critiques seem completely legitimate to me, and I'm someone who's vaccinated and willing. They also address the problems that children were having, the heart problems children were having with the vaccines.
Where? Tell me.
The panel discussion I watched, the guy said there's been only 400 cases in the United States of kids with long-term heart problems, and some children, there's a handful of children, which is a small amount, according to them, that had died. Now, I don't have any information to counter this,
But you just said the guy. Can you give us a name anyway for the person who said this?
So Dr. Robert Malone's been one that's been out there in the public. There was a panel discussion on a YouTube channel that you obviously you don't believe everything you see on the internet, but these were all medical people who were some of them with their practices.
Okay, let's get a response from Dr. Shames. Thanks for the call, Derek. Appreciate that. A couple different things to take in there. Basically, let's start with the basic issue here about vaccine mandates and your particular belief in them or not.
Yeah. So if you could help me stay on these subjects, Jeffrey, I can't remember them all, but all right. The vaccine mandates, I don't know what I said a couple of years ago pre-pandemic, but I'm like everybody else. I'm not a big fan of having the government tell you what to do, especially tell you what to do in terms of your health and your body. I mean, I think we all bristle at that. Mm-hmm. But these are unprecedented times. We're facing something that is a huge threat to our country, to our way of life, to the world. And so it really isn't and can't be business as usual. We have to rely on the science as we know it. We have to adopt and change our policies based on the science as it evolves. As it turns out, mandates look like a really important tool to help create safe work environments. I have no interest in going into a hospital and wondering whether my ultrasound tech or my phlebotomist or my nurse or doctor, for that matter, are vaccinated and putting me at risk. They're human beings. You know, they're not always scrupulous about their protection. They go to the break rooms like everybody else. They go to parties when they're off duty like everybody else. We need to create safe places where we work, where we get our health care, et cetera. And we need to achieve herd immunity to the best we can. So we're all in this together. Yes, it's true. Kids really don't get terribly sick from COVID by and large. I mean, there are tragic stories of kids after they get measles, after they get pertussis, after they get influenza. So there's no surprise that kids can get desperately ill from COVID, but the rates are much less than for adults and for vulnerable adults. The real issue is we need kids to stop spreading the disease so that grandma and grandpa can live their lives to the fullest over time. That's my mandate.
All right, that's your mandate angle. And the other stuff that Derek was talking about, the effectiveness of a booster designed for the Alpha variant and the Delta variant. Same basic disease with some genetic differences, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of theoretical things that you could look at and say, aha, that's going to be a problem. And then we wait and we collect some data and find out if it is. Yes, the Delta variant is more aggressive, it spreads more quickly, and the booster shots are less effective than if we had the Alpha variant. Well, we don't have the Alpha variant. We have an altered disease. The booster shots are definitely beneficial for that. They make the most sense for those that are at the highest risk, certainly make sense for those with underlying health conditions and those over the age of 50, 60, you know, pick your number, but there's uncontroversial evidence from my perspective that the boosters are effective. There are other issues to discuss. Should we be giving boosters while other people in other parts of the world have not gotten one vaccine yet? Those are valid to consider, but the boosters are effective.
Okay. To the issue that Derek raised about resistance a la superbugs, we're not talking about putting antibiotics into people. Vaccines work differently to basically train the immune system. Have you heard anything about any sort of resistance being created within COVID-19 or an ability to overcome the vaccines?
That makes no sense to me. I can't scientifically even make sense out of that.
Okay. Red flags on safety, just in general. Is there anything you've heard? I mean, we have the documented issue of people occasionally getting the blood clot issue with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So that's acknowledged. Anything else out there that causes you to think,
Well, it's putting it in perspective. The issue really is, gosh, you know, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine might produce blood clots occasionally, but you're protecting against COVID, and COVID really produces blood clots. The risk of a clotting disorder with COVID is very real and much larger than the risk from any of the vaccines. And you could march down the list of theoretical and perhaps very rare side effects from the vaccine, like myocarditis, for example, and then look at what the incidence is for COVID, which is much, much higher. So, again, it's an imperfect world. we have a serious disease we're trying to get a handle on, and the evidence to me is overwhelming that the vaccines are an important tool, and I do think we can vaccinate our way out of this.
See, Chris in Medford emailed, says, I wonder what public health would be like if public schools did not require students to be vaccinated. Seems like it is only international travel and public school attendance is the reason we have a vaccinated population. So thoughts from Chris in Medford. Randy and Roosh from last week says, most of the vaccination-resistant people I've talked to won't be swayed by statistics about rates of hospitalization for the unvaccinated. They have, in nearly all cases I've encountered, been swayed by right-wing media hype about the danger involved in getting the vaccination. I blame right-wing politicians for this disaster, says Randy and Roosh. So let's see. There are some questions in here, too. First of all, the general situation with vaccination and the mandate coming Monday, any concerns about capacity in healthcare in Jackson County?
Well, sure. You know, even though our healthcare providers are really working hard to explain, you know, the situation to their workers and to provide information and vaccination for them, we're going to lose some people. And it's going to stress our healthcare system and other systems as well, perhaps. I don't see any other way around it to achieve something as important as an entirely safe hospital system. You know that you're going to lose some people in the process. But what you're going to gain is going to be really very important, and it'll be a tough time for us all for the next couple of months, I think, until the dust settles.
All right, just a couple of seconds to pick up a question from Abby from 3 weeks ago. Wants to know if the source was found of the E. coli outbreak.
Not that I'm aware of. I was on vacation for a couple of weeks, and I sort of forgot to follow up with that. You know, these things come and they go, and quite often you never do identify a source. So
interesting. Okay.
I don't know yet.
All right. Well, not the most assuring thing in the world, but yeah, there we go. All right. So COVID's still the main topic, and Dr. Jim Shames, we're still planning on having you back next week for another chat about it. So thanks once again.
Okay, you bet. Thanks, Jeffrey.